I want to welcome all of you this evening. My name's Lanny Peterson, and we are so fortunate tonight to have with us Marnie Gillard, who is talking about, Marnie, tell me your title tonight, the things we carry.
The title is The Stories We Carry.
Stories We Carry. Lovely. For those who don't know Marnie, she has been a mentor, a leader, a teacher in the storytelling world as long as I've been around. She is one of the first people I actually met a good 15 years ago at Sharing the Fire, and she was already a mover and a shaker here. Marnie, when did your book, Storyteller, Story Teacher, come out? How long has that been in?
Basically, end of 95, early 96.
Yeah, and then Marnie was telling us just before we started recording tonight that it's now an e-book. So for those of you who have hard copies, treasure them because the value is going up by the moment. But for those of you who have not yet experienced Marnie and her work, I encourage you to download an e-book and continue this evening's learning in all different new ways. So I don't want to take any more time away from you, Marnie. Please welcome Marnie and bring us into the stories that you carry.
Okay, my pleasure, Lanny. Well, as long as we were talking about the book, mentioning the book, it's exactly something that's made me understand about the stories we carry. I'll just do a little bit of history. That I was a classroom teacher. I was very much a student of Lucy Calkins, who was a teacher who taught the teaching of writing. Lanny, I'm just aware, I want to just ask here, do we sort of introduce the people as they come in these days?
No, just keep going. We'll find out who they are at the end. So
okay,
don't interrupt
great.
Yourself, Marnie.
Welcome. That's welcome. Great. Okay. So I was a teacher, and I wanted to learn about how to help children find their voices in writing. That was really my big goal as a young woman teaching middle school students. And so I heard this woman, Lucy Calkins, who was down at Teachers College in New York, and I said, you know, she's got a big reputation already. I'm going to go down and see her. I thought, she must be wise. She must be old. And I went down there, and here I am, and I'm looking at a woman who's 33, the same age as me. She's already this big teacher. She's running this huge organization at Teachers College, you know, her PhD. And for 2 straight weeks, we heard her tell stories, but she told them with the concept of children's voices are really important, and here's how we empower them to speak in writing. You know,
Marnie, I'm going to stop you for a moment, and I am going to encourage people to put it on mute because I am hearing a lot of background noise, and I want to just be able to really hear you. So
okay. I get that. I'm hearing it too, so I get that.
People would hit *6. It'll put you on mute, and you hit *6 to take yourselves off. Thank you, Marnie. Please
sure
go
thing.
On.
Sure thing. Okay. So here I am, this young woman, really just so basically beginning to do this extra study beyond, you know, my undergraduate and my graduate degree, which never felt like it was like the training I really needed. But this felt like real teacher training. So just to make a long story short, this thing of Lucy saying, you've got to do your own writing. For you to be able to help children find their voices, you have to be finding your voice. And literally nobody had told me that all in my college years. So I began writing. And Lucy's thing was, now, write for publication. Write for other teachers. Tell them what you're doing in your room. Because as you write, you'll learn more about what are you doing in your room. You'll be naming these things. You'll be like a researcher. So, I was a very obedient student. So I'm like, okay, I'll do my own writing. And then Lucy said, but don't write about the teaching of writing. You know, what are you doing that's unique in your classroom? Well, I had just stumbled onto storytelling. So I barely had my feet even wet, but I was a researcher. I was trying it. I was seeing how it affected our voices. And sure enough, by writing about it, I was discovering my own stories. Here's just a little piece of that. It was actually not my first, but my second article, and I was writing it for Language Arts Magazine, and it was a deadline. It was the theme was Teacher as Learner. So I was just telling the story of going to my first weekend-long storytelling event. It was a sort of a private retreat with one teacher who was having us find one story to work on the entire weekend. We were doing many, many exercises to go deeper and deeper in the story. And it was thrilling. It was just, you know, just like I felt like I had finally found the art of my life. And so I'm writing this article after it and telling all about the event. And basically I'm near the end and I can't find the end of the article. And I said, okay, so what's this article about? It's like, I just found this thing called storytelling. It's really teaching me about my students. And so what's the ending? And when I got to this impasse and I couldn't get the ending, I got really quiet. I just said, okay, calm down. This is due like tomorrow if you're going to get it in this issue. And I just got quiet. I got quiet and I kind of opened just to myself or the universe and thought, you know, maybe an idea will come about the ending. And I'd never had this experience before, and I've never had it since, but a little voice went, you're not telling the truth. And it was like, who said that? I'm not telling the truth? What's the truth? And then I didn't get any more answers. So I thought, okay, just get quiet again. And the minute I got quiet, an image came into my mind of myself at 15 standing on a stage in my high school in an oral interpretation contest reciting Patterns by Amy Lowell, which is a long narrative poem about a girl whose boyfriend has died in the war, and it's like she's saying, he and I, we would have broken these patterns together. I needed his support, and now he's gone in a pattern called a war. And the last line is, what are patterns for? And seeing it in my 30s, looking back at my 15-year-old self, I thought, oh, my word, I was already a storyteller at 15, and I didn't even know it. I was carrying that story in me all these years, and it wasn't a personal story in wording, but I knew at 33 that was my personal story because I was grieving the death of my father who had died in a car accident not much before I chose that poem. And I was raging at the world. What is this pattern that we have that we don't grieve? Mm. I had not grieved. And so as long as I got one image, I closed my eyes and I said, well, maybe there's another one. So I closed my eyes and I got quiet and up pops an image, a story I'm carrying of me and my dad sitting next to each other, and we would perform, my dad being Maurice Chevalier and me being Hermione Gingold. We met at 9. We met at 8. I was on time. No, you were late. And it's this two old lovers sort of doing this thing back, and my dad gets the great line of, I remember it well. It's from Gigi. And it's a song. I'd never thought of it as a story as a little girl. It was a song we sang. But of course it was a story. It was a story of this couple. And it was a story of me, the little girl, number one, talking back to my father again and again and again, you know, discounting what he's saying, no, you're wrong, I'm right. And in the end of the song, it's me saying, How strong you were, how young and gay, a prince of love in every way. Admitting, as an 8-year-old, that I have this great affection for my father through a song. I could never have done that publicly in front of anybody, like how much I love my dad, you know. It never would have occurred to me, but I did love my dad. As all my siblings, we had this huge relationship with my dad. So, again, here is a story. So things come in threes in storytelling. So I said, well, I'm going to go back further and see if there's anything else. And I got quiet. And, oh, my gosh, there I am, 5 years old, at a talent show for the park playground in the summer with my hand on my hip singing, I'm a little teapot, short and stout. And as my 30-year-old self looks at this little 5-year-old, well, what's that story? Oh, grown-ups, when I get all steamed up, would you tip me over and pour me out? Because I'm little, and I'm round, and I'm so young, and I have so much inside me, passion and joy and aliveness, but I don't know how to exactly control it and use it well. It was a metaphor. It was a metaphor for who exactly I was. My mother said, I really didn't like you at 5 and 6. You were just so full of yourself. And I must have been, you know. And I was a storyteller in the making all those years. So there's one little story that I totally happened on in my 30s when I'm just discovering storytelling, and I realized, oh, it wasn't the truth that I had just discovered it. I had been storytelling all my life. And it allowed me to put those three little vignettes in the article at the beginning, right up front, and then refer to them in the end as, you see, just as I had these stories, all of our children, they have these little pieces of who they are, of their true self. Now, mine were oral things, songs and stories and a little, you know, nursery rhyming thing. But our children, in our teaching, if we'll give them the chance to use their voices, they will have a way to show us through writing or speaking or building little toothpick bridges or, you know, having historical things or science things or math things, who they are. If we, and I was a language arts teacher, so I really felt like I could do that. I could give children their voices in so many ways in language work, you know, orally and in writing and acting out things and all of that. So that was a huge wake-up call to me. And I think I did end up writing about that in Storyteller, Story Teacher. I went on, after I wrote the book, to, you know, I was doing folk tales like a lot of storytellers, but I was so interested in life stories. And I did find out that, yes, indeed, I was carrying folk tales. When I first got involved in storytelling, they were sent, you know, friends and teachers were sending me to the library, swaps, you know, story swaps. Go to the library, 398.2, you know, find all these stories and learn them. And it was like, I was doing that a little bit, but learning new ones all the time, and I wanted to have a new one for every, you know, week of our month, you know, for our story circle. And then my mother retired from teaching, and she brought home all the things from her classroom. And one day I was pawing through her boxes, and there is the Red Fairy Tale book I owned as a child that I had completely forgotten I even had. If somebody had said to me, do you know the story, the Country Mouse and the City Mouse, or do you know the story of the Shoemaker and the Elves, I would have said, oh, yes, I remember. Someone read me those when I was young. But then when I saw the book and I'm going through the pages, there were all these stories that weren't well-known fairy tales, but they were my stories. They were stories I was already carrying deep in my psyche, One was about being a greedy old woman and not wanting to share her cakes. And in the end, she won't give any of her cakes away, but the universe is messing with her. She kept saying, oh, I'll make you a small cake, but she'd make a small one and it'd get bigger. She'd make another tiny one and it would get really big. And then she finally made one that was so little, but it flopped all over her kitchen, and she just said, see, I'm not meant to give you a cake. Go away. And so, you know, now she's alone, and she just accepts that I am greedy, and I'm going to eat this cake that I made for myself. And in doing so, she's transformed. Now, of course, as a child, I heard it as a cautionary tale because she's turned into a woodpecker. Her nose gets sharp, and now she has to fight for fat little beetles for her treats. No more cakes for her. But as I am in adulthood, I'm seeing eventually, after I tell it like a few thousand times, I see, oh, no, there's way more to it. She's actually honoring her greedy side. She's letting herself see it and name it and claim, this is who I am. I live alone. No one is helping me. I'm not used to sharing my things. I've grown very internal, and I'm not sharing this little sweetness that I have with anybody. I'm keeping it for myself. And, you know, in Jungian terms, it was almost like I integrated that, you know, that in myself, that there's a part of us that needs to be greedy and hold on to our sweetness. I think I'm still struggling with that. I'm sometimes not greedy enough of my time for meditating, my time for finding silence. I'm go, 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 busy, 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 you know, give the world all my gifts. And that's good. That's part of my life's work. But as I get older, and now I'm actually, I've gone back to start a master's degree in in theology, because the stories of my faith, I don't ever tell. I've never really told them. I didn't want to be all Miss Christian out there in the world. So I was just loving them but never telling them. And now it's like I'm suddenly realizing I can integrate those stories. Yeah, I can't tell them every place, but suddenly, as soon as I accepted that part of myself, all these opportunities showed up. I'm teaching Vacation Bible School, my third time coming up, and it's a blast. I get to be with little tiny kids, and we're acting out Ruth and Naomi, and we're looking at Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane with three-year-olds and going, yeah, it was like scary. Here comes the cops. They're going to get him. And it's just amazing. These stories that I've carried are now opening up, and I'm finding I can be playful with them in the same way that I've been playful with the folktales. But I want to say one more thing now, going back to the personal stories. My earliest teachers were like, no, 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 not personal stories. No, that's dumping your life on an audience. And thank God we all got past that. I know we've gone a little sometimes way to the other side. Now our slams are like all, everybody dumping their life. But it's okay. It's okay. We're carrying stories. And if we can become conscious of that, awaken to that, that everything coming out my mouth when I'm just yakking away about myself, oh, I'm telling a story. And what am I getting out of telling this story? What am I learning from telling this story? And then start listening to each other. Oh, look, this lady that I don't even know in the doctor's office sitting next to me, she's telling me her story. And I go into listener mode because she is telling me her story, and I am going to commit to being present to it. I don't have to do it forever. She's not my next-door neighbor, although I did have a wonderful 80-year-old next-door neighbor who, when she saw me moving in, went, you are going to be my neighbor. I can see it. It's going to be wonderful. And we didn't know, but my husband and I figured out, you are going to listen to all my stories that no one has ever listened to. And Bill couldn't do it. He would roll his eyes and go, I'm out of here. But I eventually woke up to, no, don't brush these stories away and go, oh, no, not again. I'm a storyteller. I'm a story listener. Honor these stories. And the minute I changed the quality of my attention and went to that committed listener place, Celia Saar, she's gone now. What a gift she became to me. This old Jewish woman who lived next door to me and just told me everything about her life, her girlhood, her young womanhood, all the things that the world had never really listened to her, and many of them were wonderfully uplifting, joyous stories. Just savoring her beautiful Jewish father, who was like a Talmud studier, you know, he wasn't making any money. He was leaving it to his wife to figure out how to support us so he could study his religion. And then he would do little things here and there to, I guess, make some money. But what his daughter loved about him was that he had committed to knowing God and loving God and being a philosopher. And he was, you know, her personal private philosopher. It was an amazing gift. So this thing of telling our stories, whatever they are, this is something I'm learning about. It's huge. I just feel like it's continuing to open and open to me. And it is reminding me that the work we do is healing work. The last 2 weeks of just coming up to this, I've been at Schenectady High School, the inner city high school right near me, and thank God I've had this residency now off and on for about 3 or 4 years. It's so wonderful. And each time it's a little different. This year, the teacher who got me, she had 5 classes, and she said, here's what I want to do. These are seniors. They're leaving, you know, this part of their life. They're going off into the future, whatever that is. Let's help them find a 3-minute story that they can tell eventually on tape, and we'll make a recording of everybody's stories, you know, on a DVD, and it'll be a graduation present. And first I was thinking, 3 minutes, oh my gosh, how am I going to help any child tell a 3-minute story? I always want to talk and talk and talk and talk. And then if I model that, then they talk and talk, and it's hard to make them short. So I just went, okay, Marnie, you've got to find 3-minute stories. You've got to just look in your life and just grab for them. And to be honest, I didn't actually work on it too much before I got there. And Louise and I both went, yeah, I haven't practiced mine either. And we said, come on, let's just do it. Let's set the timer. We just set the timer, and we just pick a moment, pick some little moment. And I've had stories that have now been, you know, 15-minute performance tales. Some are half-hour performance tales. And I just took, like, the kernel of that story and made it a 3-minute story. And it was amazingly powerful. I couldn't get all the details, but I could get the heart of the story. One of the stories I told the kids was, and this isn't when I perform, it isn't, but I've told it a lot in workshops to teachers, that when I was 16, I got to go to Malaysia as a foreign exchange student. And it was life-changing. I learned about diversity, and I learned about this thing of color, how people argue about the color of skin. My own Malay sister was absolutely gorgeous. She said, please cover up your arms. You're so fair-skinned. I don't want you getting dark. I don't want that to be the thing you go home with. And I'm like, are you kidding? I'm going to get the best tan of my life. I'm on the equator, baby. Roll those sleeves up. Wear those sleeveless things. And she was Muslim, and she did not wear sleeveless things. And she's like, no, no, it's not good to get dark. And I was like, Aini, this is a lie that the whole universe has been telling us. Somehow it comes out of the pain of being different. No, no, it's not right. Now, that's actually not the story I told the kids. But I just realized that's a story I am carrying big time especially after working for 2 weeks in Schenectady High, where the colors are just from every rainbow, from white, all the way to black, and beautiful golden oranges and yellows and who knows what in between. And it's an important story to me because of that awakening at 16. So that was, you know, that could have been a little three-minute story. Mm. The three-minute story I did tell them was that when I came back with this big new understanding of so many things about religion, and I'd been to Buddhist things and Hindu things and Muslim things, and I was a Catholic. And it was just barely past Vatican II, where, like, I didn't even know it's okay to go to all these places. I'm just like, hey, too bad if it isn't. I'm in Malaysia. I'm going to the Hindu temple, you know. But anyway, when I came back, my guidance counselor, this was the story, he called me in senior year, as he calls in all the kids, and he said, so, Miss Marnie Gillard, you are the daughter of your two parents who I like very much, my good friends, and what is it you're going to do with your life? And I said, well, you know, I lived with a Muslim family all summer. I had no idea that Islam was this thing that was all over the world. I'd always kind of heard about it in, you know, ancient history class as this thing that was kind of in Europe, and then maybe it ended up in the Middle East, and maybe a little North Africa. I didn't know that it was like this beautiful world religion. And maybe I could do something like study Arabic, and then I would be able to be like a go-between. I could speak Arabic, and I could be somebody who helps people around religion, you know, conflicts they might have around religion, especially in the Middle East, like, get along better. That's what I think I might like to try something like that. Speaking Arabic. And the man just burst out laughing. Ha ha, oh, honey, you can't do that. Oh my goodness, who ever heard of studying Arabic? I don't even know any colleges that teach Arabic. And when I tell the story to the kids, I just do it a little aside. He wasn't much of a guidance counselor. And then I come back and say, my voice was silenced. I felt this rock come down upon me, and I could barely even speak to say, well, thank you. I don't know what I'm going to do. Because then he followed it up with, honey, you're going to be a teacher. Your parents are teachers. You know, let's sign you up for, like, SUNY Albany. You know, that's one of the best of the state schools. Your mother can afford that. She's not going to be able to send you someplace to teach us Arabic, even if I could find one. And I was just so silenced. I felt like I was stupid. That was a stupid idea. Why did I ever think of that outrageous idea? Mm-hmm. And I went back to my classroom and just felt shitty, you know, the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how long. I finally just let that go. I just let that go. That was a stupid idea. I embarrassed myself. It was only years later that story I was carrying came up in me during a teacher workshop I was doing about opening children's voices, giving their voices, responding to their crazy ideas in whatever way we could to just fan the flame. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the stories I told the kids. And by doing that, oh, my gosh. And I knew this was going to happen because I've gone there lots of times now. I opened up Pandora's box. Those seniors said, you mean you really want to hear this story? And they told me of the deaths they had witnessed in the ghetto. They told me of their bad behavior that almost got them killed. They told me of the day their parents sat all the kids down and said, I know this is going to come as a surprise, but we're getting divorced. They told me of seeing their mothers carried off in cop cars and seeing their dad's suicide when they stumbled upon it in the bathroom. Unbelievable, painful stories. And I let them cry, and I helped them cry if that's what they needed to do, because I said, you know, we're going to tell these stories lots of times. You're going to tell it to a partner. You're going to tell it to another partner. You may decide this isn't the story you want to tell on the tape, but you get to tell the story now, and if you want to tell another story, You're carrying millions of stories. All you have to do is open up to them, and those stories are going to come up one at a time and go, now it's my turn, tell me. And you can pick which one. You can find the joy of making a new friend. You, as one boy said, I am a dancer. So many people don't know that about me. I am a dancer. This is my essence, dancing. And it is not for entertainment, just entertainment. I entertain. I can wow the crowd when I dance. But it is not just for entertainment. It is my life force. When I'm dancing, I feel like I can just change the world through dancing. And
wow.
I heard stories like this again and again, because my assignment to them was, it's not just this story that something happened. It's what are you, because of that story, carrying out into the world? And I talked to them about, you can carry the darkness of your story. I'm not saying you can't. But for your story to be a gift, for your story on this DVD to be a gift, you've got to find the light in the dark. What is the gift of this story? Mm. And for one girl, it was like, my parents threw me out when I was 13, and I got pregnant. They said, you are not our daughter.
Mm.
And I said, I am not giving up this baby to adoption, and I am not aborting this baby. I'm going to have this baby. And that was 5 years ago, and she's brilliant and beautiful. Did I have to grow up and quit fooling around? You bet I did. But I did that. And I wouldn't recommend getting pregnant at 13, but what I'm taking out into the world is, I will have my life, and my daughter and I, we're both in foster care, and it's good, and I'm going to make something of myself. So our stories, the stories, I can't even begin to tell you, all these amazing stories. I want to sit and with all my notes that I took, write them, even if just for myself. But, of course, this is my story I need to tell, is that I'm doing this work and get it out in the world so more people know it's a work that can be and so healing. So I think that's a good place to stop. And Lanny, thank you for staying out and giving me your ums and ums to just know that I had a listener. And now I'd be happy to chat with whoever wants to say anything.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's a lot of questions out there for you, or comments, thoughts,
comments,
reactions,
anything.
Appreciations.
Yeah. Appreciations, sure. Glad
Hello?
To have them. Hi. I'm Marnie. Here I am.
Oh, hey, Marnie. This is Shifra.
Hello,
yeah, I come on. Yeah.
So, you know, there's, I don't know how many people, but there's a good 10 people on at least. So we'll
all
great. Take turns,
okay.
But go ahead.
Sure.
What would you like to say?
I thought it was really great. I thought what you shared was, you know, it was very inspiring.
Thank you.
And I think I'm not sure what exactly I need to say, but I think sometimes I don't know if other people can relate to this, but I think that sometimes if there's a trauma, you keep on like trying to somehow like tell that story again and again.
Yes.
And
yes, you're very right.
And,
this is
and,
the thing I have to be aware of. Yes.
Yeah, and the question is how you can like, I don't know, if it's tell it in a different way, tell that story in a different way.
Yes.
To the point almost where that's all you can remember sometimes.
Yes.
And
no.
I wonder how you can tell it differently so that you can somehow come out of that story and remember that there's a deeper story.
Exactly, exactly. It's always, I'm going to respond to this now, okay? And then we'll ask another question from somebody else. So here's my response. It's not like I've got the whole answer to the universe.
Yeah.
And of course, when I was doing, and I didn't really talk about the stories on my CD. My CD is called Without a Splash, Diving into Childhood Memories. And it's basically when I put five life stories of my girlhood together, and I began to see them as like a unit. I never got to tell them as a unit because they were like all long stories. So I would tell maybe one at a time in an assembly with some other folktales. But working on the CD, I got to see, oh my goodness, this is a pattern in my life that's repeating. And my pattern was just basically little girl striving to please the adults, being a little bit of a perfectionist, but the universe continuing to wound her. And the wound was a little different every time. It was sort of like, let's say, a monster. Mm. One time it was my mother, the monster. One time it was a different teacher that was the monster, if you think of it in folktale metaphor.
Mm. Yeah.
And that my job was to stand up to it and be brave and say, you will not defeat me. Now, that was just my set of stories. But actually, as long as we're just going to talk trauma stories, I think for many, many kids and people of all ages, even like I know a 73-year-old woman who's trying to stand up to the monster inside herself, and she's saying, you will not defeat me. I am not dead yet. I have life, and I'm going to live these last years of my life. But it's not just kind of telling the one little trauma, not to say that it's little. It's,
right. Yep.
It's this series of standing up and finding the joy on the other side, like the pregnant girl did. Did you hear me saying
right.
that?
Right. Yeah, yeah. I heard that. That was very powerful.
It's like, I'm going to live my life. Don't think you're going to keep me from it. You know, I saved this child's life and I saved my own. So it's always going to the stand and face. Okay, I mean that's a simple, and I know it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
the trauma and say it will not defeat me.
Yeah,
there's a chapter in my unwritten, it's unpublished. I mean, it's written, but it's unpublished yet. Called "Standing with Ourselves." The stories teach us to stand with ourselves, and I do hope that someday that book will. It needs a lot of revision, but that it'll be out in the world too.
Yeah.
Let me take a second question. Okay.
Alrighty.
Thank you,
Shifra.
Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Yeah. I'll take comments or anything. Yeah. Hi. You still out there?
Sure. Hi, Marnie. It's Muriel. I just want to say how wonderful. It just reminded me of so much about what's important in story. And, you know, your story of your awakening with Lucy was very reminiscent of what happened to me. So it just
really
for the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Muriel, would you mind if I referred to a story you once told me that I just, like, I loved?
Sure. I don't know what I could share with you, but sure.
About your son. What, it was a year that you came to Pyramid. And, you know, I've heard you tell Jewish stories and things like that. But when I heard you tell the story of your son's disabilities and how you remained his ally, and, you know, it was a very triumphant story. And I've never forgotten that story because...
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm talking about here. And really it relates to, like, Shifra's question that, you know, you had this thing that was traumatic in your family, and you just said, I'm loving this son exactly the way he is. I'm cherishing him. I'll be his advocate in the world. And I've never forgotten that story. It was so powerful when I heard
it. Thank you.
What's other stories? Can you say other stories you know you carry, even if you could just give, like the time when, like a sentence?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, it's just as long as we're talking. And I'll ask everybody out there, what are some of the stories you know you carry? Not that you'll tell me the whole story, but
right.
I know, like for me, I've carried my father's death, his instant death in a car accident. It's affected everything. It affected
me in
tough ways, but it affected me in wonderful ways.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I lost my mom to cancer when she was 50. And I tried over and over again to write about it, to make up a story, to do a poem, and I can't do it. And it's really, I don't know why. I was very close to my mom, and, you know, I'll kind of write a little snippet here or a snippet there, but I can't seem to get my, it feels too big.
Yes, yes, yes. Can I say something about that?
Yeah.
Do you mind?
No, it's not about, at all.
It's about feelings. When we have trauma, we have feelings. And in the world we live in, this world that is not particularly feeling-friendly, a lot of that stuff, it actually gets like frozen inside us. We've taken good care of ourselves, you know, in a sort of protective way. Like, I'm not going to, you know, cry my eyes out to the world. I'm not going to be debilitated. I'm not going to fall down and die because somebody died. You know, I'm going to go on. This was very much what I got taught at 13 by my mother, who had to. She had six kids, and, hey, my breadwinner just got killed in a car accident.
Yeah.
Okay. Have a crying funeral. Okay, that's enough. Here we go. We're going to take on the world. And that all that grief got frozen inside me. And grief especially over our own traumas, our losses, our loss of our girlhood, loss of whatever it is, it's huge. And so, yes, it's hard, but you know what? A buddy makes a difference. I have about I have about six or seven story buddies, and we give each other permission to not be interrupted, and we can cry, and we can rage, we can shake, we can let our feelings out, and the person just lovingly delights in us. There's no, they're there. There's no quieting the emotion. It's like, And then the storm passes. It does. That big storm of emotion will pass. And, you know, it's there's still gallons left of it. But, you know, you can only cry so much at one time. And then, or the buddy, if like some of my buddies will say, is this a place where you want to stop and just sort of talk now again? Because after you discharge emotion, you will have insight. There's no question about it. I will just tell you one other little story that's really a big story for me. When I was trying to write my book, the beginning of writing my book, it was so big in my mind, so many things I had to say about the children and everything. And I had given myself, I'd quit my job so I could write this book, and it was September, and it was a gorgeous day. And, oh, look, it's the day of my dad's anniversary. And I say, okay, Marnie, no more cleaning off your desk and, you know, tidying the house. Start writing. Just write. And what I actually did was, here's what so I was alone, I needed a buddy, so I said, okay, I'll open my poetry book. This is a poetry book I love. I'm just going to open it like some people would open scripture or something, and I'm going to read something, and it will inspire me. I will let whatever I read guide me. Now, that was me asking universe for help, and I opened to Alice Walker's poem that began, "How I Miss You, Dad."
Wow.
And really,
whoa.
I had like, you know, like hair standing all over my body. And I said, okay. That's what it is. This is the anniversary, 32nd years my dad's gone. Alice Walker came out of the universe and just gave me this poem. I'm going to read her poem, and then I'm going to write my How I Miss You, Dad. And for one solid hour, I cried at my computer, and I just kept writing. I'm writing, crying, writing, crying, writing, crying, writing, crying. And in the end, I ended up having a long journal entry, but I kind of took some of it and I turned it into a poem that was called Ringing Out My Tears. And it was me standing up to the grief that's locked in me and saying, I'm ringing this out. I've been crying and crying because nobody around me was allowed to cry, and now I am going to leave the crying and go out and find my joy. And I really did. I really had this unbelievably euphoric feeling, and I went to my dance class that night, and my father's spirit appeared to me like I could see him.
Wow.
It was one of the most unbelievable experiences of my life, and I
know
it was because I allowed that big chunk of grief to come out, and I didn't hold it back. After, you know, years of holding back. I mean, I'd already done a lot of crying in therapy, but it was like blocking me. I get a friend to just be with you while you try to write one of these poems and sort of help you keep your feet to the fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God love you. We'll talk more about
this.
Thank you. Yeah. Who else? Anybody want to say anything or have another story they carry? It's big work, I know. Yeah? Was somebody going to say something?
Well, I was going to say something, but I also wanted to give somebody else a chance.
Sure. Well, go ahead. Go ahead. Nobody's jumping in, Schiffer. Go ahead.
Well, I think I want to tell the story kind of that I carry about my mother.
Can you make it like a
I can make it really short. Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
And I, you know, I remember my mom died when I was 6 years old, and my uncle came in to tell me what had happened, and I didn't go to the funeral or anything like that. I knew she was sick, but you know, he just came in and I could tell he was really, really uncomfortable. And he said, you know what happens to people sometimes when they go to the hospital? And I said, I didn't. I lied. I knew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, sometimes they die. And then I said, but she didn't. And he said, well, she already has.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that was as much as people ever talked about it.
Right.
And I remember, what I remember was, like, I just remember kind of going outside, I think. I'm not even sure, but I remember something about just, like, kind of, like, looking up at the sky and thinking, like, what am I going to do now that my mother's gone?
What
am I going to do now that she's gone?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like there were people around who really had any idea of what they were doing. So, but I just remember that kind of looking up into the sky. And it was funny because yesterday I was out walking. And I know that when I do an internal shift to somehow asking the universe for help, something shifts, and usually that happens to me around trees. And it was funny because this woman came by with a dog, and it was this amazingly loving dog, like unbelievably loving dog.
Nice.
And the dog's name, you know, just stayed there, and, you know, just the gentlest dog you could possibly imagine.
Lovely.
And the dog's name was Sky. Her name was Sky.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Now, just for time's sake, I'm going to stop you there, if that's okay.
Sure, yeah.
But see,
yeah.
To me, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This image of you as a little girl, and Shifra, I'll just say, you know, I've known you for so many years, I've never heard this story.
Hmm. Yep.
This is a power story for you.
Mm-hmm.
That
yep.
hearing this information, even the lying is, to me, is a little bit of like a little child's power going, I'm going to just go along with what you think I think, you know, but you go ahead, keep talking, but I'm not going to give you my total truth that I know about hospitals, and I know my mother's in the hospital. That's
right.
Something to talk more about another time.
That's an interesting
But the thing
thought,
that's
yeah.
really powerful is the going out and looking at the sky.
Yeah. Right.
When I was in eighth grade and I had to do a test about who is the famous person you most admire, and it was the end of eighth grade. My dad had been dead now about 10 months. No, not even 10, like more like 8. And my mind went blank. I couldn't think who was famous that I admired. I couldn't think of anybody. And my mother's voice came into my mind and said, your dad was famous. And I remember I looked out at the sky. Can I do that? Can I write about my dad as the famous person I most admire? Because I could also hear my teacher's voice in my mind going, stick to the topic. Stick to the topic. Do not go off the topic. And so I had these two invitations from the universe. And when I looked to the sky, it was like, go for it, baby.
Right.
Write about me. So that's an image that's a very powerful image. That's the standing up thing. Often it comes in the form of an image. Beautiful, beautiful. Anybody else out there, I know you're out there, I would just love any thoughts at all. Don't be afraid to say, well, wait, how do you do this? Or, you know, any, don't worry about finding fault or anything. Just what's going on in your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, this is Bob Canigas out in New Mexico.
Bob, I love it. Great.
Howdy.
Thanks for coming on.
I got in about 10 minutes late, but here I am.
Okay. Well, you're doing really powerful work with story.
Well, at the moment, listening to this, I just came back from a little family reunion. We got together. Liz and I got together with our son and our granddaughters in Las Vegas for a few days, and it just occurred to me that so we've got there's a 10-year-old and a 2-year-old, and it just occurred to me that I'm carrying lots of stories about my granddaughter.
That she
doesn't remember right now, and you know, and at some point, I think she's going to want to hear these stories. And so, just thinking about sort of what we see in other people's potential and the aspects of their story that we sometimes, as elders, see from a different time perspective, and we can't really even share those stories with our kids or grandkids until they've reached a certain span. So
really? Do you think so? Can you say an example? Because the thing that's coming up in my mind, because I work with young people all the time, they love hearing stories about themselves.
I get that, and I love to tell most of the stories, but I can't tell them all.
Uh-huh.
Not with the kind of depth that you know that
can
the stories actually
kinda,
that
you,
that are inherent.
Can you sort of formulate a little example just so we could hear it? Like we just pretend we don't know her or anything, and you could not say her name or whatever. But just
here's an example, and I would tell parts of the you know I've retold parts of the story, but there's depth to this story that. That I haven't even fathomed yet. When Maya, and I may have shared this on a Storytel post years ago, but when we were all together, maybe when Maya was about 5 years old, we were sitting around at breakfast, and there had been some awful terrorist bombing. Our son, who was just, you know, horrified by the whole thing in a moment of passion, said, you know, we should just drop a bomb on these people.
Okay.
And Maya, at 5 years old, with a horrified look on her face, said, no, that's not a good idea at all. And so he said, tell us more. And she said, well, you see, I'll draw you a picture, okay? I'm going to draw a line. Over here on this side of the line are the good people. And over here on the bad side, on the other side of the line, are the bad people. Oh no! She says, no, that's not gonna work. That doesn't work at all. She said, it's continuous. She goes, it's continuous. People go back and forth from one to the other. And so if we drop a bomb on the people who do bad things, they never have a chance to go back to the other side of the line.
Oh, beautiful!
Oh my God!
So
beautiful.
Okay, so that I'm sure we all hear that story in different ways, but to me, it was, there was deep, deep, deep wisdom in that
Absolutely
story.
Absolutely deep wisdom, and she's now 10.
We just put a, I could give her an addition to this story. I could have said, hey, guess what? Last week, Maya, when I was with her this week, I could have said, last week, I finally had the courage to put a bumper sticker on our car that said, God bless the whole wide world, no exceptions. And the day after that, somebody, took a cup of coffee and spilled it on purpose all over our car because it seemed like that bumper sticker made them mad.
Funny, yeah.
So I'm just thinking, I'm carrying this story about her deep wisdom as a 5-year-old.
Yes, and it's
wonderful
thing.
And when she's a little bit older, I might add this little piece of the story that, about the bumper sticker, but I wouldn't do that right now.
Sure, okay. Mm. It just seemed to me like I know with some of the young people I'm close to, if there's a memory I have of them that's like uplifting like this, like, wow, I remember the day when you showed your drawing to us grown-ups, and it's like you gave us a new way to look at the world. It's that simple. Do you remember that day? I remember that day I saw you, my beautiful granddaughter. I mean, you'd have your own way of doing it.
And I, Marnie, I totally agree, and believe me, I've done that many times, and
I
could put everybody to sleep here for the rest of the night, going on and on about all the wonderful things that I've remembered and have shared. I just think that occasionally there are deeper levels. I mean, there are experiences that I'm of my own that I'm still digesting. At 60
right,
plus.
Right. All I'm saying is my whole thing is
can't
that
fathom,
if
so.
We keep telling, if we keep noticing them and letting them out, because there's something about holding them in the silence. There's no, I don't tell all my stories and stuff, but anytime I find myself, often, I just let that story out. Look at that. It's out in the world, and it's not doing any harm, and, wonder what made me tell that particular story sort of confessional,
Yeah.
I heard a lot of confessional stories from these kids. You heard that me saying I was with high school kids as seniors.
Yeah.
And, wow, I got a lot of bad behavior stuff. But I said to them, it's not enough to just revel in the bad behavior. Your story has to be a gift to us. What do you know now? Mm. I'm not saying you have to turn it into, I was bad. I don't mean that. But what do you know now that you didn't know before? And except for one girl who said, I know that it's okay to break the rules. And I thought, okay, maybe that's what she needs to know, because it seemed like it was important for her to be able to break the rules. Because I was that kind of kid, too. I didn't break rules. And for me to go, it was important for me to say, Christ, what are patterns for on the stage in front of my friends? Because it was in a poem, And I sort of broke the rules of using the Lord's name in vain that I'd learned a lot as a child. So I just I love that you're carrying your grandkids' stories and telling them when you choose. That's wonderful. Wonderful.
Oh.
Marnie, your talk this evening has been the gift to us, and we will carry our learning forward thanks to you. I'm afraid we've come to the end of our time.
That's okay.
Well, I also wanted to say thanks. And I had a question, though. I wondered if any of the people on the woman who had talked about her mother, if you would ever want to share stories, you know, do like a story buddy thing at all.
That's Muriel, and I can help you facilitate that after the phone call.
Oh, okay, sure.
Okay.
And I also, yeah, and I also the was interested in the story that the gentleman just shared.
Bob, yeah. Okay, I can give you some stuff about them, so you.
Okay, great.
Connect.
Connections. Good connections, all. Thank you all for joining us and listening tonight, and we will let you know when we've got the next teleconference set up and ready to go.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. If
great.
You have any other things that you think about,
great.
Just Marnie at MarnieGillard.com. Love to hear from you.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, all. Good night.
All right, good night.